With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Homer and Apple Sources Minor League Podcast. I am Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson. How's everyone doing this week?
Doing all right. Really enjoyed that one day of fake fall we had.
Yeah, weird weather.
It was nice, and now it's hot again.
Yeah, in the shade, or if you have a little breeze, it's like a very comfortable low to mid 70s, and then in the sun, it's like horrible, and now that cool weather's gone, and we just have the horrible sun again. And it's going to get even more horrible, like tomorrow and Tuesday and Wednesday. Great.
It's delightful. You know, my girlfriend's watching the U.S. Open. Everyone looks miserable. It's hot as hell. There's no shade. Great times.
Well, you know who's probably having a great time today?
Ronnie Mauricio stands.
Possibly. But you know who else?
Go ahead.
Mike Piazza. Because today's Mike Piazza's birthday.
Huh.
Yep, good for him. He's turning 55, which is kind of weird to think about. But Mike Piazza was not the first All-Star catcher to play for the Mets and the Dodgers, and he wasn't the last either. So for promote, extend, trade this week, we are going to promote, extend, or trade All-Star catchers that played on the Mets and on the Dodgers.
And there's how many of those are there?
Yeah, there's been a couple. So first up, we got Todd Hundley.
Yeah.
He was a Met from 90 to 98, and then he signed with the Dodgers, and he played there 2000 to 2003. Then we have Jerry Grody, who was a Met from 66 to 77, and then he was traded to the Dodgers, and he played there for 2 years. And then the only guy on this list who went the opposite direction, we got Paul LaDuca, and he was a Dodger from 98 to 2004. And then he signed with the Mets in 2006 and played with the Mets for 2 years. All of them were All-Stars at one point or another. Both of them had solid 10 years on their original team. and then played with their secondary team for a couple of years.
Personally, trade Reduca.
Yeah,
I just never liked that dude. No strong thoughts on the other two.
I feel like Hundley was the best out of the group.
Yeah, I mean, he basically was Mike Piazza before the Mets had Mike Piazza.
He just wasn't a good catcher, right? And then they tried to make him an outfielder. Like, yeah. I was really young at the time, so I don't really remember.
I could tell you literally nothing about Todd Hundley.
Yeah, I know he switched hit, right?
Did he? I'm not really sure off the top of my head. Todd Hundley definitely, I feel like, has gotten, like, the shaft, though. Like, he was, like, Mr. Met in, like, the 90s, before the Mets got good in the late 90s. He was, like, the only guy that kind of had, like, homegrown good.
The only Met that was worth a damn?
I mean, there was other guys that had good years and stuff like that, but he was, like, their guy. You know, he set the home run record for most home runs by a Mets player, period, that Beltran tied a couple of years ago. A couple of years ago. 2006 was not a couple of years ago.
No, it was not.
He was a switch hitter.
Okay.
Yeah, I really have no strong feelings on any of these dudes.
He had a really weird career, looking at it. So, he was a Met from 90 to 98. And for years, he was not a good hitter. Like,
then he started doing steroids.
From 90 to 94, he had his career high OPS plus in a single season was 93. And it was like 68, 62. Like, he just was bad. And then from 95, 96, 97, he had a 131, 140, and 148 OPS plus. And then in 1998, I think he got hurt, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
Because he barely played.
And also they got Piazza, so.
Yes. And then he tried to play. They tried to put him in left field because they were on the roster at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that did obviously not work because, like, let's be real.
Not real a lot of Daniel catchers. Murphy in the outfield hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's always been a weird one, but like he was like better than like Jerry Grody was a really good defensive catcher, but he couldn't hit save his life, which is very whenever he played coded.
Yeah, that was back in the day when, you know, your shortstop is expected to hit 210 and your catcher is expected to hit 220.
And it didn't matter because, damn it, he knew how to call a game, which probably he did. Like, I'm not doubting that, but.
Yeah, I mean, whatever his offensive value, Jerry Grody handled a pitching staff that had Tom Seaver, Jerry Kuzman, Nolan Ryan, you know, Gary Gentry, all these greats, and they were all complimentary of his catching abilities. So, I mean, this is, you know, the 1960s and 70s are before the era of stats to signify framing and whatever else, but
I mean that's one of the most interesting things to me because when framing stats became a thing, we realized that a lot of the catchers we thought were good actually sucked.
Yeah.
So I'd really love to know historically who are these good defensive catchers who were actually terrible.
Yeah, right. That'd be really cool to go back and see who was actually as good as their reputation.
It is of course unknowable.
Yeah. And Paul LaDuca was Paul LaDuca.
The Paul LaDuca memory for me is still that weird-ass double play in the NLDS.
Yeah.
Just because it was so strange. And so... I was at the game. You were? Lucky son of a bitch.
Definitely a good game to be at.
Sean Green to Jose Valentin to Paul LaDuca, right? And it was three former Dodgers. Making one of the strangest double plays at home you'll ever see. I remember who it was that ran through the stop sign to be the second out. It's like, what are you doing?
It was a weekday, like day-ish game, and I got out of my parents took me out of school, and we got there, and that was the first play we saw. Like, like we were walking to our seats and we were walking at Old Shea, like you couldn't see into the field from the concourse. Like, so we walked out into the concourse to walk around. So as we were walking to our seats, we could watch the game. And literally the first play we saw was that. And we were like, oh, shit, what? Because we got there a little late because of traffic and all that.
Definitely a good game to be at.
I don't even remember if they won that game or not.
They did.
They did, yeah.
John Main pitched.
Hell yeah, John Back Main.
John Main was, like, really good for a minute.
Yeah.
And then his shoulder just went...
Before he became a habitual liar, unfortunately.
Ah, yes.
God.
Poor guy. So, all right. So, consensus is Poladuk is getting booted, and Jerry Grody and Todd Hundley, we'll keep them.
They make the cut.
They make the cut. Poladuk does not make the cut. All right. The Mets affiliates this week now. Syracuse. They played the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. They played five games. They've lost five games.
There's excellent.
One more game tonight. So.
They're tanking for that higher draft pick.
Someone should let them know it doesn't work like that.
Shit.
If only it did, though. So, yeah, not a good week for Syracuse. Obviously.
You would never have any minor league team try ever again.
No.
It'd
no,
be a disaster.
We would be signed to play. So their five-game losing streak, not good for them, but it has helped the Iron Pigs because Syracuse's five-game losing streak means that the Iron Pigs have a five-game winning streak, and they have moved into tied first place with the Durham Bulls as a result. but Syracuse, they are 19-35 now in the second half, so no bueno. The Binghamton Rumble Ponies, they played the Harrisburg Senators, and they literally had the exact opposite week. They played five games. They won all five games. And then there's one more game that's going to be played later tonight after we're done with the show. So hopefully they win that. The Rumble Ponies are 9-1 in their last 10. But unfortunately for them, the Somerset Patriots have been just as good. The Somerset Patriots have been 8-2 in their last 10. So Binghamton has not actually moved in the standings. They are 31-23, which is two games behind first place. They were two games behind first place last week. They were two games behind first place 2 weeks ago.
That's feels depressing. Like they've
been, yeah, it feels like they've been two games behind Somerset for like a month now. But because Somerset won the first half, you know, Binghamton is effectively in first half and it doesn't really matter. But in better news related to that, the team that Somerset, you know, they've been kicking their ass was the Portland Sea Dogs. And Portland was the team that was basically nipping at Binghamton's heels. So Portland has fallen a bit and they are now five games behind the Rumble Ponies. So Binghamton is a nice five-game cushion there. Brooklyn Cyclones, they played the Greenville Drive, and they are 2-3 on the week. The last game of the series, again, is tonight. Either way, though, win, lose, whatever, it's not a great week for the Cyclones. They are 34-25 in the second half, and they have a lead in first, but it's just a game. The Jersey Club Blue Claws are right there behind them, and then obviously depending on how this last game on Sunday evening goes for both teams, conceivably, you know, they could be tied for first when the show gets posted on Monday morning. The upcoming week, it is the final week of the regular season. Cyclones are going to be playing the Wilmington Blue Rocks. The Blue Rocks are 23-36, well below 500 and last in the division. And the Jersey Shore Blue Claws, they're going to be playing the Hudson Valley Renegades. They are 29-30. Which is 4 out of 6, and then just a little bit under 500. So I guess slight advantage Brooklyn, but not really. The Cyclones are 12-12 against Wilmington on the year. And more recently, in the last 2 months, they played them in two series, and they are 8-4. And the Blue Claws are 5-10 against the Renegades on the season as a whole. But most of those losses came in the first half when the Renegades won the division and were a much better team. In the second half, the Blue Claws are 4-1 against them. So neither team again has no real advantage in terms of like strength of competition or whatever. So crossing our fingers here. And last but not least are the St. Lucie Mets. They played the Tampa Tarpons and they lost 3 games and they won one with 2 games getting canceled because of the hurricane in Florida. So
that whole thing.
That whole thing. St. Lucie is 17-41, which isn't great, if you didn't realize that. They also have a week to go, so soon their season will be over. Kind of sad, but, you know, not a good team. So individual players good, yes, but as a whole, hasn't been their season. So it is what it is.
I will not be too worked up over St. Lucie's record, frankly.
No.
No.
Not at all. All right, so August just ended. So we're going to give grades to our top 25 prospects based on how they did for the month. I think we missed July because of everything that was going on with the draft and the draft signing deadline and whatever and all the trades. So everyone gets passing grade for July. But we're back now. We're back for August. No curves. We're going to be strict graders. And, you know, do you want to start with the 25 or do we want to start with one? Which way do you guys want to go?
Start from the top.
Yeah.
All right. So we will start with the top. The number one prospect of the Mets system coming into the season, that was Mr. Francisco Alvarez.
He's so scuffled.
He has. There's no getting around it.
He has been. But it's an interesting question because I don't really know how you gotta. Are you gonna say, hey, he's in the majors at his age, so it's okay that he's scuffling a little bit? You know what I mean? Because it's a lot better for him to be scuffling in the majors and still being like pretty solid, rather than the alternative as he is bad enough where he got demoted like Beatty, which we'll get into later.
Yeah, I mean, he's been good. I mean, we didn't cover July, but he was like insanely good in July, you know, and now he's not great in August. He's currently hitting 139, 262, 194 with a single home run.
What's his strikeout rate?
He has 11 walks to 21 strikeouts in 72 at-bats.
It's not even... it's not bad. Like, it seems like a dude is just tired. It's not like he's striking out 50% of the time.
He's a literal child playing.
Yeah, he's a young catcher. It's late in the season. They rode him pretty hard and refused to DH him while keeping his bat in the lineup. So, like... bad, but I'm not overly concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, you know, he's broken the glass ceiling. He's gotten to the major leagues. He's established himself, I would say, as a major leaguer going into next season. Like, whatever he gives us is like gravy, you know.
He's not gonna win Rookie of the Year, but also that's fine. Like, I don't want to say that's fine because obviously you would rather him win Rookie of the Year than not, but like. I'm not going to take away, even if he finishes the rest of September kind of like this or isn't much better, I'm going to look at this first season and be like, hell yeah, I'll take that 100 times out of 100. Because then, I mean,
what's he up to, like 21 home runs, 22 home runs, whatever?
How
like,
many?
You could just... Go ahead, Lucas.
I mean, how many catchers in baseball are you taking over Francisco Alvarez at this point? Taking Will Smith and Sean Murphy, obviously. The Astro fans, I'm sure, are going to yell about Yainer Diaz, sure. Cal Raleigh exists. JT Realmuto
but
exists.
Diaz is not even a catcher. Like, he's just a DH.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he's good because he has zero patience. But, like, you get past the obvious names at the top, like Smith, Murphy, Realmuto, and I think Cal Raleigh belongs in that conversation now, too. Who Who else is really an obviously better player than Alvarez at this point at the position? And we know catcher's a wasteland, but like...
Yeah, it's just not that many.
I look at it like this. The Mets season ends right now. Do they need to go out and get a catcher?
No.
I'm comfortable with Alvarez starting the year next year as the Mets' primary catcher, and you go from there. So
I'm an idiot. I did not say Adley Rutschman. But for instance, like the Nationals just paid Kybert Ruiz a whole bunch of money, and I'd for sure rather have Francisco Alvarez. Like, no question.
Mm-hmm.
His defense still rates really highly. The offensive, the potential like sky high offensive upside is still there. He's been good. Rough month. Oh well.
Yeah, I'm gonna give him a C just because a C plus because not great at the bat, but he is defensively, you know, no questions. You know, you're getting good defense, and again, the potential is there. He tomorrow he could go off on like a 4 home run in a row streak. You know, that just. Mm-hmm.
I wish the Mets would call up another catcher like Ken suggested. I think that was last week when we did that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like to see him get more at-bats.
DH'd him more throughout the season.
Yeah. But clearly,
I wish we had a competent manager, but, yeah. You know, alas.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Which is unfortunate, but...
Well, you said before, I think, Thomas, that it's unlikely that Alvarez is going to win any Rookie of the Year awards this year. Our second prospect, he's going to get votes. That guy being Kodai Senga. Senga's having one hell of a rookie season, and he had a pretty solid August. He was red hot in July, you know, so he had a 1.93 ERA. You know, that's hard to follow up on. But he had in August a 3.16 ERA, 11 walks and 34 strikeouts in 31 innings. Can't really complain about that. Like to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I would give him a minus.
I'd give him an A, like straight up. He's been better than I kind of expected him to be. Not that I thought he was going to be bad, but like obviously I wanted them to sign him. I thought he was going to be a 2 or a 3, but he's like better than that probably. I don't think he's an ace.
The fork is literally one of the 5 best pitches in baseball.
I know, it's a dominant pitch, and
something like 1 out of every 2 swings people take against it is a whiff.
He's adjusted to the game so well, too, like, to America and to the American game of baseball. It's just, Tier sucks, obviously, but he's one of the guys where you're like, thank God they signed him. Because now, in 2024, I'm not worried at all if he has to take the ball on opening day. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but it's also like, there's 15 to 20 other teams are going to put out a worse pitcher on opening day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not top 5 in that category, but he's definitely not the worst. And that's all you could ask for, question mark? I don't know.
I mean, he should be getting down ballot Cy Young votes.
Yeah, 100%. Like, there's a chance he has a better chance at the Cy Young than Rookie of the Year because of how Corbin Carroll has a chokehold on it.
People are going fucking gaga over Blake Snell. If Blake Snell wins the Cy Young, he's going to be one of the most undeserving Cy Youngs in the last 2 decades. But Kodai Senga has had arguably a better season, a very similar season overall.
Yeah.
Lots of strikeouts. He has fewer walks than Snell, but still more than you'd like. His ERA is worse than Snell, but if you look at the ERA predictors, he's better. Kodai Senga's been really fucking good.
Yeah, a friend of the podcast, Jared Seidler, put that in my head that Senga could get more Cy Young votes than Rookie of the Year votes. And now I'm Senga Cy Young pilled. Like, because
I mean,
it's just a,
If he gets none and Snell wins, it's ridiculous.
It's such a blah group. Like, the American League, Cole is going to win, and because Ohtani got hurt and he's been great, and that's just what it is. But in the NL, it's boring.
Logan Webb's really good.
It'll be interesting. I don't remember. It was in our morning news, I think. But I remember seeing an article where some pitcher said that they liked Senga's forkball and they were studying it, and now they're going to start throwing it, and they've been having success with it. It'll be interesting to see if all the success that Senga's having, that you start seeing more pitchers throwing a fork. I mean, a splitter has been kind of coming back in vogue the last couple of years, but, you know, forkball is a different, you know, pitch, different grip, everything like that, moves differently. But it'll be interesting to see if that spurs a kind of forkball renaissance, because of this one dude just having such massive success with this one pitch.
It'd be really fun to see that, yeah. And also, he genuinely seems like he has fun when he plays. Like, just the enjoyment level factor stuff. Like, he seems to really like it here, which obviously it's the only thing he knows in the U.S. But I don't know. It's just, it's like a good vibe on top of him being really good. And that's always fun.
Mm-hmm. Out there recruiting for the team already, so.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like,
crossing my fingers.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. Our next prospect, number 3, Brett Beatty. And he played at the MLB level in August. And he also played in AAA because he got sent down. He only appeared in 6 games in August. And he literally went hitless, which is not great. Then he went down to AAA and he hit 246, 329, 493, which is not great, but it's not terrible either. I mean, 5 home runs he hit in 17 games. That's a good ratio. I don't know. I mean, we were talking about Beatty a little bit in depth last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, about how sending him to AAA, it's like, well, what are you going to, how much is going to be fixed? And he's back, and I don't know. We'll see. But it was not a good not a good August for him at all.
No,
that he's back makes me question the original decision to send him down more. Like, but who knows? Maybe he just needed a little bit of time to let the launch angle adjustment click a little bit. I mean, he hit 5 homers. Who knows? AAA is being played on the moon this year, so
I don't know. That's why I wanted to put him on IL. And you could have done that. He could have played out of official games that way, but I don't know. I guess then he wouldn't have gotten those reps.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, it was clearly done, like clearly something needed to be done. And yes. was the decision the right decision? Was it a better opportunity? You know, I guess if we were closer to the situation, I mean, we can look at the player, we can analyze the stats, whatever, but that's the extent of what we know, you know. For all we know, Beatty could have had other issues, whatever, and sending him to AAA to just work on whatever would have been better than just a phantom IL stint and, you know, working on it in the backyard or whatever, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a complicated one. That's a tough one.
Yeah. All right. Our next prospect is Kevin Parada, and he really did not play much in August. He got hurt, and that basically he got hurt at the beginning of the month, and that basically, you know, took a chunk of the month out of his playing time. You know, he played in 8 games in total, 5 with Brooklyn, and then 3 when he recently, at the end of the month, got promoted to Binghamton. Neither one was particularly good. But again, it's 5 games pre-injury and then 3 games, you know, coming back from injury. So,
yeah, I'm just going to give him a wash and call it a day.
Yep, exactly.
He hit his first double-A homer last night.
Yes, good to see. All right, next is number 5 prospect, Jet Williams.
A plus.
He gets an S, exactly. He was promoted from St. Lucie to Brooklyn at the beginning of the month. And in Brooklyn, which is a place that's, you know, notoriously hard to hit at, he has a 301, 458, 548 line in 27 games with 8 doubles, 5 home runs, 10 stolen bases, 26 walks to 22 strikeouts.
Guys, I think he's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is good. Let's hope he can continue that. I mean, imagine he did really good. Let's see. His first 2 months, April, May, were not great. He turned on in June, and he has not stopped since. So you have 3 months of high-level production, and he's consistently gotten better and better at a higher level of competition now. So kind of exciting.
Yeah, and look, like the high end, he's still not hitting for consistent high end exit velocities, but his launch angle is really nicely maximized. He clearly has an excellent eye at the plate. The athleticism is there to stick up the middle. Be number 2 in the system for me, I think, pretty easily.
It's going to be a fun conversation because I don't really know. Probably, I just don't know where I put him.
If he has another month like this, I might just put him 1. Like, he is 20. He'll probably be in double A next year.
True.
I don't know. I mean, we still have a month and, you know, to. Although, actually, Brooklyn's season ends next week, so. I forgot. He's not going to have much of September. But we'll see.
Unless they call him up again, like really get real aggressive and let him get some reps in AA at the end of the year. But I don't know if I would do that, but I think you could make an argument for it.
You definitely could. You could make the argument to call him up to the Mets and say, fuck it.
I don't know about that.
He's too young.
All right. Next is our number 6 prospect, first pitcher that we've discussed now. Oh, no. Well, Senga, but he didn't really spend much time in the minor leagues. No time in the minor leagues. Blade Tidwell. And in August, he got promoted from Brooklyn to Binghamton. And he has a 3.86 ERA in 25.2 innings with them. He's allowed 22 hits. He's walked 11, and he struck out 26. I would give him a C+.
Sure.
Yeah.
What letter equals mid?
Yeah, C. I think a C. What would a C is like in the 70s?
Like a yeah, 70, I would think a B is like in the 80s.
Yeah. So C is like a 75. So C plus, it's like 79. I feel that's fair. I mean, he's not doing bad. It wasn't a bad month for him. It wasn't like particularly great either. There's room to improve, but you know, there's some definitely some stuff that you like. So I feel it's a fair grade.
He was fine.
Exactly. And similar to Jet, Blade Tidwell, his first 2 months, not great. And, you know, in June and July, he was very good. You know, August, he's been a little less good. But again, he got promoted from a very good pitching environment in Brooklyn to a less so environment in Binghamton. So.
And also just might be running out of gas in general. That happens to these guys.
Yeah, he is approaching. He's over a little bit over 100 innings pitched, which I might off the top of my head probably say is almost double like his career high. I want to say he pitched like 70 or innings last year or with Tennessee.
Yeah, especially because his shoulder was always hurt.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Honestly, he's done. He's gotten his middle of the year was so interesting that it's fine that his August was all right. Like, let him. Kind of. If the year ends this way, then I'll still be happy with his year overall, is what I'm trying to say.
Agreed. All right, next is number 7, Alex Ramirez. And was not a great month for him, unfortunately.
Is Alex Ramirez a top 20 prospect in the system?
20? Probably.
Yes.
Is he a top 15 prospect? 20, sorry. Is he a top 15 prospect in the system?
That's a good question.
Not for me, is it?
Hard to say. That's much harder to say. He's not thinking. He's definitely not top 10 anymore.
No.
But I don't think that he's below 20. So he's going to be somewhere in the 10 to 20 range. But is it going to be 10 to 15 or 15 to 20? I guess I would say 15 to 20. That's my feel right now.
Yeah, but that feels kind of low. But they added so many people to the system
right.
For me to like wrap my head around that sometimes still, really.
Right. It's partially because his season, you know, he's repeating the level. He's not having a good season. And really, it's hard to even pick one thing and say, like, yes, he's noticeably improved. You know, his walk rate is improved. Like, okay, that's cool, but... It, you know, it is what it is. But at the same time, he's still, you know, really young. And there's all the athleticism and, you know.
I get that. I do. I just kind of don't care. Because
right.
He has not in shown measurable improvement in leveraging that athleticism to do good baseball things.
Right. No, I'm just, it's. Yeah, he's too young to give up on, but agreed, like, he has, you know, next season is going to definitely be, like, the make-or-break season. Like, if he has another season next year where he's, you know, not particularly great, you know, I'm not going to say it's over for him, but it's like, all right, you know, move on.
All I'll say is I feel vindicated in my Stanley Consueger is a better prospect than Alex Ramirez take.
Yeah, I mean, Consueger has not lit the world on fire. Well, we'll discuss him. You know, he's come up in a little bit. Next up, we have number 8, Mark Vientos. He spent all of August at the major league level, and then he got hurt. And at the major league level, he hit 169, 191, 262 with a 3 doubles and a home run, 2 walks, 23 strikeouts, has not looked good in his at-bats. Not a good month for Mark Vientos. And I think now he's also back. He's probably going to be back on the injured list with now an injured foot.
He's not going to play through it.
Oh, is he?
Mm-hmm.
That's smart.
Good, good, excellent. lessons have been learned from history here.
He said it today before the game. He was like, he didn't even get it checked out. He's just going to play.
Okay. It's good that a player who has like 20 speed is going to be playing on an injured foot. That will.
Yeah, I know. It's bold, but.
For no reason.
Well, this is the kind of thing where a maybe smarter organization would say, well, kid, we admire your gumption, but it's out of your hands. Sorry. Do we have an organization like that? Don't really think so. All right. After number 8, Mark Vientos, we have number 9, Ronnie Mauricio. And he spent all of August in AAA. And in 24 games, he hit .289, .357, .558 with 5 doubles, 1 triple, 7 home runs, 8 stolen bases, and 11 walks, 22 strikeouts. Really good. He was struggling mightily in June and July. And August, you know, the calendar flipped and a light bulb went on and dude went on a tear. And now he got called up to the major leagues. And I think he hit the double yesterday, his first game.
Yeah, he smoked it too. He hit it 10,000 miles per hour.
Right, it was like 117.
Yeah, 17, 117.
Yeah, yeah. Which is higher than anything that he's hit.
Stands are out in force.
Well, honestly, good for him. Go off, kid. Yeah.
I mean, I looked it up, and that 117 exit velocity double was off of a fastball. What does Ronnie Mauricio love to hit?
Yep, fastballs.
Why is any major league pitcher throwing him a fastball?
So I know he's playing. I think they're playing right now.
They are.
He has another hit today.
Oh, okay. So
he's going off. Like,
he's batting like 600 through 3 games. It's great.
Good for him. Yeah. Oh, I think I missed a day. I don't know what day is. Okay, I thought he only had 2 games. So he has 3 games, even better. But yeah, I mean, no one has ever doubted that Ronnie Mauricio could hit the ball hard. And no one ever doubted Ronnie Mauricio could hit fastballs. So
nope.
We'll see. He did like laughably bad with like curveballs and changeups in AAA, and he did decent with sliders. So we'll see how the major league players deal, you know, how he deals with that against major league players. But you know, definitely gets an A in terms of his August production. A plus.
Oh yeah.
All right, next up, number 10 is Dominic Hamill. And in 27 innings with the Binghamton Rumble Ponies, he had an even 3 ERA with 10 walks and 26 strikeouts and 24 hits allowed. A B minus, I would give him maybe. A B, a solid B, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair.
I know he had one very good game. I don't know if it was in August or if it was in the calendar month of September, but his most recent month, he threw like 6 scoreless innings. And he's having the kind of season. A lot of the Mets pitchers are having the kinds of seasons where he'll throw 6 scoreless innings one start, and then they're not going to make it out of the second inning in their next start, you know?
Yeah, it's just inconsistency. And
yeah.
That will come with playing and pitching more and getting major league coaching in and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. But for as, you know, Hamill was pretty bad in the first half, but in July he had a 3.38 ERA. In August now he's a 3 ERA. So maybe
he was really good on Friday when I recapped.
Okay, yeah, so that was Friday.
He went crazy. He had like 11 strikeouts and in 6 innings. Gave up, I think, 2 hits. The big thing is he's walking less people, if I remember correctly, like during his hot streak his streak of good play, because that was always the killer for him, where I felt like every start I recapped of his was he would go like 4 innings and like not give up many hits or whatever, or maybe give up 1 run, but he would walk like seven, and then they would have to pull him because he's at his pitch count, and he's just got to get that shit under wraps. And if he does, I could see a path for him.
Yep. Honestly, just consistency.
I think he's. Do I like him more than Christian Scott? I have to think about that. I like Christian Scott a lot. I think the third, second, or third best pitch
occupy the same mental headspace for me. To be honest,
yeah, that's fair.
Which is not a bad, like, it's not bad to have those guys. It's just I would rather them be not your best pitchers, not your, you know, like, that's really the difference.
That's fair.
Like, I don't necessarily think that they're bad prospects. It's just in other systems, they are not the second or third best yet. And that's
Dodgers
the Mets
have
aren't
like six guys better than that.
Exactly. The Mets are just not there for that yet. And they, in time, theoretically, they should be. So I'm not like freaking out about it now. It's just.
I know you're a little bit higher than me on Sproat, but I like both Scott and Hamill more than Sproat.
I mean, we haven't seen him, but yes, yeah. Theoretically, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of, I don't know. I was actually thinking about that like the other day. I was wondering, like, I guess Sproat is not going to be making his debut, which I wouldn't have given much of a thought.
He pitched a lot this year.
Right, but then at the same time, I see Paul Skeens is already in Double-A and pitching, you know, 3-4 inning stints.
But I'd argue he shouldn't be.
I agree.
I think they're being a little too aggressive with Skeens in that area.
It made me sad. I said, our top pitcher is not pitching. Theirs is. It's not fair. But at the same time, Brandon Sproat is no Paul Skeens. I wish he was. I wish it was Paul Sproat, who had the power of Paul Skeens.
And the last name of... No, I'm kidding.
Well, neither of them have any fastball shape, so...
You know who else doesn't have any fastball shape?
Okay.
Our number six prospect, Calvin Ziegler.
Womp.
Yeah, he's...
He's dead.
Basically, he's not pitching. He was... There was some thought that possibly he could come back late in the year. And now he hurt something else, and he will not be pitching. So, not great.
Not what you want, as they say.
That really sucks for him.
Mm-hmm. Number 12 prospect, Mike Vassell. He had a pretty solid August. Pitched 29 innings, and he posted a 2.79 ERA. He gave up 18 hits, he walked 12, and he struck out 26. Yeah, at Triple-A.
I'm really impressed that he hasn't run out of gas yet, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm shocked that he hasn't. Like, it's a good thing, but...
Mm-hmm.
And his first month with Syracuse was pretty bad. And, you know, again, we're looking at, you know, monthly samples, you know, which are small, but... He's shown improvement in pretty much every facet of the game since, you know, getting his toes wet in AAA. So that's good to see.
Yeah.
All right. Number 13, Stanley Consuegra. And in 25 games with the Brooklyn Cyclones, he's hitting .229, .308, .542. That's two doubles, two triples, eight home runs, and three stolen bases for good measure. And then he has 10 walks to 29 strikeouts. So, yeah, as we were starting to say before with Ramirez, he's not really lighting the world on fire, but he has tools that are manifesting themselves in game, you know? Like, the power tool is there.
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't think he's... Probably can't hit in Double A.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Right now, Ramirez can't hit in Brooklyn, so
he's interesting that, like, I think him and Ramirez are kind of similar prospects, but they're like similar tier prospects in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But Consuegra, like, I kind of felt like he had prospect fatigue, even though. He's young, because I feel like we've been talking about him for 8,000 years. You know,
years, right?
Yeah, he just kept getting hurt and stuff. And I'm happy he's healthy now, obviously. But I'm kind of wonder what it looks like as like a fourth outfielder power guy. And that's, if you said that 3 years ago to me, I'd be like, really?
Yeah.
That's what his vibe is, but it kind of looks like it, you know, and that's kind of cool.
And player.
Yeah, that is totally useful. Like, how many times are we screaming about the Mets not having fourth outfielder and stuff?
For years we've been screaming about them not having third outfielders, so...
yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
Very true. Right, next up is our number 14 prospect, Jacob Raymer. And he spent August with the Brooklyn Cyclones. And in 18 games, he hit 179, 352, 250 with a double and a home run. 13 to 17 walk to strikeout ratio. And then he got hurt and not a good way to end the season, if that's the end of his season.
Yeah.
I still like him.
Me too.
Yeah.
The plate discipline never really wavered. Wasn't lifting the ball enough, and hopefully some of these new hires the Mets are making can address that. Here's fingers crossed on that front. It's like, that's like a D month, but I'm not particularly concerned.
Yeah, I mean, the combination of his prior performance early in the year, his age, the potential that we know he has, a down month, all right. Not the end of the world, especially again when there's a asterisk because of an injury attached.
Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows how long he was dealing with that.
Mm-hmm. Next up is number 15, Joel Diaz, who is not pitching because he's hurt, as is number 16 prospect, Matthew Allen.
Ish.
Yeah. Like, this is when doing this exercise, it's kind of interesting because a lot of these guys get pushed down significantly because of the Mets deadline, and it's kind of easy to forget how not great the system was.
Yep.
And now it's like, oh, okay, yeah, it's not the best system in the world. Obviously, there's better, but I take what they're doing now over what they had 6 months ago 10 times out of 100. Or 10 times out of 10, not 10 times out of
10. I mean, I had a long work meeting earlier this week, and I jotted down my top 30, which involved listing out, like, 35 guys, and I don't think I listed Allen or Diaz.
I mean, Allen is going to be, it's going to be, like, 2 years before he's even able to pitch again. He's going to be 24,
yeah.
And have like two whole innings worth of work, you know, a little, maybe 10 innings, whatever. It's the end of Matthew Allen, unfortunately.
I don't know that it's necessarily the end of his career, but it's like the end of his career on a contending roster because he's going to need a 40-man spot soon.
Like, is he?
Yeah.
Drafted in 2019.
Yeah.
I mean, he might not be if he doesn't. If he, like, no one's going to take him in Rule 5, but that's going to start becoming a concern at some point.
I don't know. I think you could sneak him through, but I also, if I'm a bad team, I'm claiming him. I'm taking him in the, like, the minor league Rule 5 or some shit like that and being like, and trying to figure out a way to get him on my roster in my system because what he once was really exciting.
I don't even think that teams think like that, to be honest. I mean, look at the whole Noah Song situation. Yeah.
Yeah, his ass went right back to Boston, right?
Boston, yep.
Yeah. Song arguably was better than Allen was able to pitch, which is pretty useful if you're a pitcher.
Oh, I don't think there's any argument that he was definitely...
Right, and
in a vacuum, a better prospect than Allen.
Yeah, and everybody was just kind of like, whatever. So, like,
it was false. His fastball shape had kind of gone to shit, is what I've heard, and I've not looked at that myself. So, but I think that partially explains why he wasn't claimed.
Well, I'm just putting it, bringing him up in context of like, we kind of like microanalyze all this stuff because this is literally what we just do and think about. Even though that mentality should be what other teams are doing, I don't think that they do.
I mean, I think the reality is that we often don't consider, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, and this is only a lesson I've learned from playing like the insane score sheet league that I'm in and that Thomas is in now. There's an opportunity cost to roster space, right? And sometimes you're sitting there thinking, yeah, I'd love to get Noah Song or Matthew Allen in my system, but that means I have to cut someone. Mm-hmm. Or, and maybe there's no one you want to cut. So that sort of concern, I think we underrate that on the public side at times, and maybe teams do overvalue their guys. I mean, they're the ones who acquired them in the first place, right? But I think that's the one like counter argument here. Like, yeah, would love to take a shot on Noah Song, but that means I have to cut interesting arm A who I really like, and I don't want to do that.
I think the answer is somewhere in the middle with that stuff, because we definitely under appreciate it as a public, just as public as the public,
mm-hmm.
because it's hard for me to quantify what your major league play, what your major league organizational depth chart is, even if I'm on a minor league podcast, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
it's still way more in depth than what even I think. But on the other hand, like, teams probably, I would say, way overvalue it sometimes.
I think they do. Yep.
Where it's like, dude, you could definitely, you don't have to cut this guy. You don't have to keep this guy. It's fine. Some teams, like, we saw the Mets undervalue it like crazy, in my opinion. And like, let dudes go where you're like, why?
No, it's hard to put yourself in those shoes necessarily until you're there and you're like, yeah, I drafted this guy in the 10th round as a sleeper I really believe in. And part of it is you do believe in him because you drafted him in the first place. And part of it is you want to prove yourself right. And like, I get it. It's not necessarily the best way to do things, but I understand why it happens and that it is a little difficult. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy football, being in like multiple dynasty fantasy football leagues, has also helped teach me this, because there'll be guys where I'm like, I don't need to keep this guy for 6 weeks because mm-hmm. it's obviously not going to happen, but damn it, I think it's going to happen in week 7, mm-hmm. you know? And then it doesn't happen, and you're like, well, shit.
You always remember the guy you cut who burned you,
mm-hmm.
like, as opposed to the 10 guys you cut who were just trash and no one ever cared again.
Exactly. Yep. Like, and on the other side, sometimes it happens where you benefit from that, and then you're like, ooh, I could chase this now. And then you overchase it. Like, it's tough. It's hard. There's a balance to this stuff. Anyway, I have Ronnie Mauricio on a dynasty baseball team, so... It's always good to play both sides, and
so that I always come out on top. Look, I mean, we have other names to get to, so I don't want to derail longer here. But like, I hope everything I've ever said about Ronnie Mauricio is incorrect.
Oh, wrong. 100%.
But
my ass
would
be buying the jersey. I'd be out there, jersey tucked in, ready to go.
I mean, if Mauricio hits, he's an incredibly fun player. Like,
it's just I'm worried about the plate discipline, and it's hard for me to get past that, even though it's fun.
I hear from Joel Diaz and Matthew Allen.
Opportunity cost, I believe.
Yeah.
Next up is number 17, Jose Budo. He spent most of August in AAA, but he did pitch a couple of innings at the major level. And he had a 3.74 ERA. In Syracuse, in 21.2 innings, he's allowed 20 hits. He walked 10, and he struck out 17. And then he pitched 2-plus innings in relief with the Mets, and that did not go well at all.
Budo's never struck me as a guy whose stuff is going to play up in the bullpen.
No.
I do think they've made him better, though. Like, the Mets in general. I think the Mets did make him a little better, but I don't know how much it's gotten. Like, and that's a good sign. You always want them to make guys better, but... There's diminishing returns. much.
He's absolutely been a better player. I mean, last, like, 2 years ago, whatever, he was just like a, he was a nobody, you know? And last season, this season, he started throwing harder. And when you could go from, you know, when you're throwing 90 to 93, or whatever, it's like, when you're throwing like 93 to 95, you're like, oh, you know, so they've definitely, you know, he's definitely been a better player as compared to years past. But again, the ceiling is just, as we've seen, you know, all of his major league stints for the most part have not been particularly great. So, but you need guys to throw in Syracuse and be available when emergencies happen. And Budo is our guy.
Sure.
Number 18, another right-handed pitcher, Lionel Avias. And he pitched 23.2 innings with the St. Lucie Mets. And he posted a 4.18 ERA, allowing 19 hits, walking 5, and striking out 30. I think it would be, I mean, he had a very bad July, and he's recovered very nicely in August. His problem has always been like kind of wildness, you know, 5 walks in 23 innings, 30 strikeouts in 23 innings. Those are good ratios.
Yep. He's still interesting.
Mm-hmm. Number 19, Bryce Montes to Oka. He is hurt. So we'll move on.
What could have been?
Number 20, Jesus Baez. He played in 12 games with the FCL Mets, and he hit 86, 180, 86. 3 singles and a stolen base. He did walk 4 times to 2 strikeouts, so that's good, I guess.
Sure.
That's a rough. That's just a rough. That's rough.
Yeah, it's one like as is mentioned already, the Mets system now is so much deeper than it was early in the year that a lot of these guys who are in like the back half of the list would not be on the back half of the list if, you know, they had the Gilberts and the Acuñas and the Cliffords and the Jacksons and whoever, you know, at the start of the year. So
100%.
Mm-hmm. Next is number 21, Junior Santos, and he was converted from a starting pitcher to a relief pitcher this month. All of his games were out of the bullpen, and he has a 2.03 ERA and 13.1 innings with 11 hits allowed, 3 walks, and 12 strikeouts.
I can't wait to believe in I know I'm going to. Like, I just know I am.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because that's
interesting.
And how old is he now?
Like 22.
That's not even old. Like,
no.
No.
Like, I know he's definitely prospect fatigue, and I'm like kind of, I don't want to say tired of talking about him just because they were so aggressive with him and then just he stagnated. But like, you look at it, it's like, yeah, I see why. And then you put him in the bullpen, he does that. It's like, ooh, okay. Let's see.
Yeah, I mean, his stuff never really developed to the point where, like, especially, you know, at this point, double A, where guys aren't going to get fooled by bad stuff. And, you know, we saw what happened. As a reliever going an inning, 2 innings, whatever, you know, you could just pump fastball after fastball after fastball and occasionally throw a slider or whatever and hope for the best. And
yeah, he could just really air it out. Obviously.
Yeah.
That's just like, and I also think that it's a smart time to do it because, what, he's in double-A now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look, if he's a good reliever in double-A, then you move him up to triple-A, and then all of a sudden it's a guy that you could call up next year. Like, that's very aggressive. But also, you should be a little aggressive with your relievers because you could move them quicker than you could move a third baseman or Jet Williams or even a Ronnie Mauricio. Like, I think people were really, not to bring him up again, but they were really knocking at the door for him, and I think he needed a little time in AAA, and he might have stagnated a little bit there, but I don't necessarily mind that they let him rock in AAA for a while, even though the Mets were going nowhere. You know, like I think to talk about what the public kind of over doesn't care about enough is I think development and development speeds also matter. But relievers, man, get them out there. Hurry it up. You know, like you only have so many bullets you could throw out of the with your arm before it explodes, because human beings should not be doing this. Like, it's just not natural, you know. Like, get him out there in the bullpen, and then if he's good, then let's go. And yeah, if he's bad, then okay.
So far, early returns are promising, so awesome. Who would have seen it? Because I love Junior Santos, and I basically gave up on Junior Santos, so nice to see this life.
I'm not doing this again.
All right, we'll move on then to number 22, Willy Fanyas. And in 12 games with the FCL Mets, he hit 278, 350, 361. He had 10 hits in total with one double, one triple. He stole two bases, and he had four walks to 12 strikeouts. Just all these FCL guys, it's just kind of like hard to judge anything.
It's hard, yeah. That FCL team was good, though.
Mm-hmm. And he did, like we say, he did, you know, it's hard to get much out of just these pure numbers, but you'd rather see good numbers than bad numbers, and that's exactly the case here. You know, he had good numbers for the most part, so, you know, rather see good numbers than bad numbers. Number 23, unfortunately, speaking of bad numbers, Eric Orszay. And Eric Orszay in the month of August had a 5.19 ERA in 8.2 innings with 7 hits allowed, 8 walks, and 10 strikeouts.
Over for the, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't even really understand what happened. Like, it just kind of went away.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, giving up, like, hard contact, whatever, it's like, okay, that's part of it is out of your hands, whatever. But now when you're starting to, like, walk the ballpark, that should be, you know, in your hands, and it's not good.
I mean, I wonder if he's hurt.
Yeah, maybe. Because it's so strange. Like, obviously, relievers are weird, and when you factor in developing players in general, it's even weirder. But, like, the dude was, like, ready to be a major league pitcher. You know what I mean? And then he was, like, so close. And then he just needed to be not bad in AAA. And he was bad that season, and that was it. Like, he's never been good again.
Yeah. And he started the first 2 months or whatever of last season, it was like, all right, cool. And then he started giving out home runs, and then just never stopped.
So strange.
All right, number 24, Simon Juan. Again, another FCL guy. And in 13 games there, he hit 265, 342, 412, with two doubles and a home run, and three walks to 9 strikeouts. Not bad.
It's fine.
Yep.
Get him to the States and see what happens.
There's really no breakouts on the DSL side, unfortunately.
I've been, because I'm a nerd and I have, like, nothing in my life. What I've been doing lately is watching DSL games and matching them up with the box scores, because the DSL games, unfortunately, are kind of bare bones and they don't even show you, like, players that are up or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But what they do show are exit velocity and launch angle and things of that nature. So I've been putting together, you know, advanced data for the main DSL players. And there are, let me open it up here. You know, statistically, like, off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you if a single guy is hitting, like, 300 or something like that. But there are a lot of 100-plus exit velos for, you know, guys. Let's see, Davison Gutierrez, who was one of the Mets' top IFA signings.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I've only gone back to the – I started, you know, backwards basically. So I have 24 batted ball events here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I have 500-plus exit velos from him in basically 24 batted ball events.
500 exit velo. Holy shit.
Yeah, you know what I mean. But yeah. High of 106.8, which is unfortunately on a ground out. But
I mean, there. I feel like a lot of those are ground outs.
Yeah, but there's, you know, you had that. There's a lot of good. I'm seeing a lot of good trends from guys. You know, Jocelyn Almonte's. These are guys that I'm tracking. These are the guys in the DSL that people should be paying attention to. Basically, Jocelyn Almonte, Anderson Asensio, Anthony Baptiste, Samuel Camacaro, Keiver Garcia, Davidson Gutierrez, Christopher Larez, who was recently.
Larez is a big one. Larez.
He was pinched for pinch for doing some steroids, so unfortunately.
Yes. Larez is a big one.
Yeah. Roberto Rincon, Jeremy Rodriguez.
Jeremy Rodriguez is the best one of the bunch, I think, by a decent margin.
Yeah.
That's the fam return.
Which is funny. It's not even a guy here.
Jeremy Rodriguez, interesting, does not have a single 100-plus exit. He has 100. He has 199.9, so I guess we'll give
him it's one. Basically 100.
Exactly.
But the plate discipline numbers and the contact numbers are all really good, so I've been told. Like, he looks like Marco Vargas.
But yeah, like I said.
It's kind of like they got a younger Marco Vargas. Like, that's kind of the archetype they were going for with him. Which it definitely popped something in whatever model the Mets have for these guys, because that's modern scouting.
But yeah, like I said, I couldn't actually tell you like if any of these guys are actually hitting well or not. I would you know, once I'm done, I guess, then look at like the total season numbers and stuff. But yeah, there's some good stuff coming out of the DSL. Hopefully a few of those guys will be, you know, in the FCL team or maybe even St. Lucie next year. But the last guy that we have on our list, number 25, William Lugo. In the month of August, he hit 289, 363, 378 in 25 games, 6 doubles and a triple, no home runs, and 10 walks to 15 strikeouts.
I like Lugo.
Yeah. Would like to see a little bit more power, you know, but everything else, you know, he started the season out rough. And he's kind of, you know, come along since July, you know, like mid-June, July. So can't complain. So all in all,
No, I mean, we go through this whole conversation and it's very good that they got the returns they did.
No, yeah. It's true. Like they really, really fixed their system or revamped their system in a weekend.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I was going to say, all in all, you know, the system as a whole, it is better than, you know, it was a couple of months ago, a couple of weeks ago. So, I mean, this list is already out of date, like horribly out of date.
Yes, this is why latest reminder not to use preseason rankings in your midseason trade evaluations, please.
No.
Yeah.
Not something we do. All right, so if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Seipel. Lucas is at elvlahos343. Ken Levin is at kenlevin91. I don't know why I said his last name. And Thomas Thomas is at zmetseason, S-Z-N. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from, rate and review. We thank you for listening. And since we are Patreon based, if you do like the podcast or any of the other ones that are in the Homer and Apple network, you can subscribe for just $5 a month. So we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.